Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
It's Here and Now. Recently, San Francisco-based superstar chef Kenji Lopez Alt had a pop-up, a one-night-only word-of-mouth meal at Roxy's Grilled Cheese and Burgers in Alston, Massachusetts, a small, retro, hip diner-style restaurant and food truck business. This was a big deal, and Kenji readied Roxy's owner James DeSabatino with a run-through.
Are we all set? Do we want to do like a practice fire?
Yes, all right, everyone get on the line.
Does everyone have an apron on?
They've been working for 3 days on the recipe, a brined, twice-fried chicken sandwich, which appears in Kenji's new cookbook, The Food Lab, named after his popular column on food science at the food website Serious Eats.
Well, what does it mean to you that Kenji is here?
It's awesome. He's really inspiring. You know, thinking I already had my own fried chicken recipe settled in my head, and then having him come in and make fried chicken with us and totally disrupt that concept of what I thought of fried chicken really makes you shrug your shoulders and say, this guy's kind of crazy, but it's kind of awesome.
So, do we want to try this sandwich now?
The moment of truth. Kenji tastes.
This is a double fried kimchi brined chicken sandwich, spicy mayo, kimchi dip.
It has sex appeal. Delicious.
And are you cooking it like most of the way through on the first side and then just a little bit on the second side? Juicy. It's good. You know, the basic technique is straight out of my book, the brining and the dredging and the double fried.
Wait. Just for a sandwich, brining?
So the sandwich is chicken thighs that get brined overnight in a solution of it's buttermilks and eggs. Seasoned with kimchi juice with a lot of salt, so it retains moisture as it cooks. And then the next day we dredge it in a flour, cornstarch, baking powder, seasoned mixture. And the key there is we make up these like nice little clumpy bits of dredging by combining it with some of the brine first, so it gets a lot of extra surface area. Then all the chicken was actually fried yesterday. Then we chill it overnight. And then the second day we fry it again, and it comes out kind of extra crispy. So that way, afterwards, when we toss it into sauce, which is sort of like a buffalo-style sauce, but with Korean flavors. So it's like a Korean fermented chili sauce, kimchi base, garlic, oil, and a pickled chili vinegar.
Now, people remember, this is just a sandwich.
So the chicken comes out of the fryer. It gets tossed into sauce, so it's sort of buffalo-style, but Korean. And then we serve it on a toasted Martin's potato roll with spicy mayo, also made with a fermented chili paste, and pickles, cabbage, and the chicken. That's it. Yeah.
That's it. No biggie. Did we mention that Kenji is an MIT grad who studied biology and sees food at its molecular level? Lined up outside, hundreds of like-minded fans.
I follow Chef Kenji online. I saw it on his Facebook event, and I knew I must be here to try it out.
Why?
I've tried all of his recipes from his food blog, and they're all amazing. It's really great recipes.
What makes them great? You're saying it from reading it. What makes it great?
Yeah, so I'm an engineer by training, and I really appreciate sort of like going into the science of why this works. That there's a lot of assumptions that people typically make with cooking that he doesn't, and he explains in a way that's very approachable and very, very much like, oh, I tried this out. I wasn't sure, and this is why this worked better than that. So I really appreciate that.
That's Raghib El-Khaja, the first of 700 who will come through this tiny diner tonight. Kenji Lopez Alt's scientific methods have many admirers. When we sat down to talk, I pointed out his many MIT engineer fans.
It's almost like you give nerdy, science-based food geeks permission.
And they don't need my permission, but yeah, maybe I do give them some kind of like like focal point, some kind of backup when they're in the kitchen and they're trying to tell someone something and they won't listen.
Well, let's talk a bit about who you are for those just meeting you. You write, my grandfather was an organic chemist, my father was a microbiologist, and I was a little nerdling. Went to MIT, loved biology, became a waiter, walked into a restaurant that didn't need a waiter, they needed a cook, mm-hmm. and you picked up a knife. Like, was there really a light bulb moment?
There was a light bulb moment as soon as I walked in the kitchen and started working. I was like, I love every element of cooking, down to like standing there peeling lemons for hours. I just love the physical action of it. I like the whole idea of feeding people and bringing people together over food. I like the precision involved and the craft involved in it. It was definitely like a, you know, this is something I could do for a long time.
So now you start cooking. This mm-hmm. is your passion. You do it for several years, but you had questions about the way things were done, and there's no time for that.
Yeah, the main focus in a restaurant is production speed and efficiency. Execute exactly what the chef tells you to do and do it as fast and as well as possible. If you just have some basic questions about science, you don't really have the time or the resources to sit down and think about it and plan experiments and test them out.
Well, just list some of the questions that you had. The one that jumped out at me was, why do my pancakes suck?
pancakes is one, because there's a lot of simple elements that go into pancakes, but they interact in interesting ways. Depending on how much baking soda you add to your pancake, you can completely change the color of it. So cooked exactly the same way, if you add a little bit extra baking soda, the Maillard reaction, that's the reaction that occurs when you heat proteins and sugars and they start browning. It occurs much faster at slightly alkaline environments, so slightly higher
See?
pH environments.
Suddenly we veered into your head, you know, and a pancake becomes a science experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by the way, why do they suck? Like, what's the best tip for making fluffier pancakes? I know it's
Well, part of it is just making sure not to overmix, because when you combine flour and any kind of water-based liquid, you start creating gluten. And gluten is that sort of protein network that gives bread its structure. But a pancake, you want it to be tender, so you don't want very much gluten development. So the less you mix your batter, the better. And then if you want sort of extra tall and fluffy pancakes, you want to incorporate as much air as possible. So the baking powder is going to help with that a little bit. But if you take your egg whites and whip them separately and then kind of gently fold them into the batter, you start with these air bubbles already built in there. So when they heat up, they expand and you get a nice kind of tall, fluffy rise, which also in turn gives you sort of crisper edges.
Well, now we get a sense of what started happening for you, because you left working in restaurants and went to Cook's Illustrated Test Kitchen, where you mm-hmm. got to finally do the experiments you wanted. And then after that, the website Serious Eats and your food lab column. Talk about some of the people that inspired you along the way, because you mentioned one I'd never heard of, Harold McGee, personal hero of yours.
Harold McGee, he wrote On Food and Cooking, which is 1984, I believe, which was the very first food science book that was aimed at cooks. And it's still sort of the kitchen Bible for anybody really interested in the science of food.
You reference him saying, and apparently it caused just complete upset in the industry, searing steaks actually doesn't keep the juices and flavor.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't?
It does not. Searing meat will add flavor in the form of the Maillard reaction again, but it doesn't actually seal any juices inside. And in fact, if you do this really simple experiment at home where you take two steaks as identical as you can get them, cook one of them by searing it first and then finishing it in an oven up to a set internal temperature, say 130 degrees. And the other one, do the opposite. Start it in the oven first and then sear it at the very end. And you'll find that the one that you started in the oven first actually retains more juices and is more tender than the one that you seared at the beginning, which is, you know, it's the opposite method of cooking.
But why is that? What's the science behind that?
Well, there's a couple things. The main one is that the entire time that you're searing that piece of meat, you are browning the exterior, but you're also slightly overcooking the layers on the outside. So you end up with a kind of gray band of slightly overcooked meat. By starting it in the oven first, you dry out the exterior of the steak, so that when it then goes into the hot pan to sear, none of the energy that is in the pan is wasted on evaporating excess moisture, which can be quite a lot of energy actually with a raw steak. So you can brown a steak in about half the time, and the less time you spend over really high heat, the more evenly you're cooking, and the more juices you end up retaining.
Best hard-boiled egg, you say, put it right in the hot water.
If you cover an egg with cold water, bring it up to a boil, the egg is going to fuse to the shell. If you start the egg in already boiling water or in a pot of steam, it will peel much more easily.
People rave about your many pages on burgers. smashed burgers.
Uh-huh.
A good 50% more moisture is lost in a burger that's been smashed down by a spatula. So if you do it in a minute, the smashing, you lose 50% more moisture than if you do it in 30 seconds. That's amazing.
Yeah, a lot of people say, like, don't ever press on your burger. You can very safely press your burger as long as you do it towards the beginning of cooking. The beef fat is a solid, and the juices in there are rather thick. What you don't want to do is wait until your burger is half cooked and then press on it, because then you squeeze out juices and they evaporate and you
and
lose them.
Gone.
Yeah.
Best thing we should know about mac and cheese.
condensed milk, evaporated milk, is your friend. It has a higher concentration of milk proteins, and milk proteins can actually help emulsify cheese sauces. So if you use evaporated milk instead of regular milk for your mac and cheese, whether you're making, you know, a baked mac and cheese or a stovetop, it'll come out a lot more smooth.
Well, Kenji Lopez-Alt, the book is like a phone book. People may not know what a phone book was, but it's big. The new book, named after the column, is called The Food Lab. Thank you.
Thank you.
And by the way, his fans at Roxy's Diner loved Kenji's double fried chicken sandwich. For more of his recipes, go to hereandnow.org.